The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Buddy Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Ray Allen. Ray is engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition, September the 18th, 2018. We're on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, and we also, of course, have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. The summer thunderstorm season, aka monsoon, is winding down. So how did we do? Zach Guido is with us. Dr. Guido, a climate scientist with the University of Arizona Climate Assessment for the Southwest Group at the UA-based Institute of the Environment. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
This is kind of our bookend around the summer thunderstorm season. We had you on at the very beginning, and then we were talking about it kind of came right on time. According to the National Weather Service, the way they keep the rainfall totals starting in June 15th, but normally we don't think of that as the start of the monsoon, but we had some activity that day, actually.
Yeah, that's right. And coming in on September and doing these with you, Bill, it's hard because it goes by, the monsoon season goes by very quickly. It's very sad, but you're right. I mean, the monsoon season kicked off on June 15th, and that is the first day of the National Weather Service's. They declare that in a way to communicate the risks. It's not as sort of meteorologically based. But yeah, we had a tropical storm, remnants of a tropical storm Bud that came in and dropped like an inch of rain across Tucson. And, you know, that sort of punctuated a long dry period, which everybody who lives in this area knows quite well. So that was a welcome relief. And then the monsoon really, like the proper monsoon, didn't start until the end of the first week in July.
And once it started, it was very humid every day, and it was raining pretty much at some place in the Tucson metro area.
Well, that is what I think is the flavor of this monsoon. So each monsoon has their unique take. And I think the characteristic sign of this monsoon is that there was just persistent levels of moisture, basically once the monsoon got going until Labor Day weekend at the beginning of September. And right, so high levels of moisture. When you look at some of the precipitation measures around the Southwest, around actually the Southeast Arizona, some of them did pretty good, above average, but I feel like around Tucson, we could have gotten a little bit more out of this monsoon than we did, just because we had that persistent moisture around. If you look at the airport, we're at about average. So it certainly wasn't a dud in that respect. And if you look at stations like Douglas Airport, Nogales Airport, they're right around average too. Sierra Vista is a little bit above average, Wilcox. So in this part of Arizona, we're kind of around average for total precipitation, but that sort of hides the fact that we did have moisture present pretty much the entire monsoon season.
It's kind of disappointing, like you say, we could have maybe squeezed more out of it because there was activity every day.
The
numbers just really are not reflective of that at the airport, for sure.
Well, and I think it hints a little bit about how hard it is to get monsoon precipitation. You have to have a confluence of conditions. It's moisture. Obviously, you have to have moisture present. That's not always the case. You also have to have atmospheric instability. So you have to have the ability of that moist surface air to rise. And that's a complicated process, and that's not always present. And then you have to have wind profile in the atmosphere in such a way that
the steering winds have to be right.
The steering winds, yeah, that facilitate the generation of these storms. Because, you know, if you have the wind profile in a certain way, you could get the tops that blow over and just shade the ground and then prevent the uplift of air. So it's a very, very complicated process. And you really, and it's why, you know, on average we have 4 days one rain event per every 4 days. Mm-hmm. So it's only 25% of the time are we actually seeing rain in the monsoon season. So and it's hard.
We may get a last hurrah tomorrow. There's really good rain chances again. This is so typical of September, a loosely organized system off of Baja, going to fuel some of tropical air up here.
Yeah, this is the last gasp.
Yep.
And we'll see. I mean, in September, you're right, like we depend a little bit more on different sources of moisture and different mechanisms. Like we need more of the big convective storms in Sonora or the sort of tropical storms off the, you know, in the Gulf of California to push moisture up, because what's going on right now is we're transitioning into the fall and we're dominated more by westerly winds.
Dry air.
Yeah. And so we need some sort of mechanism to push moisture into the region. And we have that. It looks like the next couple days we'll see some increased activity and then it'll transition more toward sort of the fall season where it just becomes a little bit harder for us to get rain. But, you know, in terms of the National Weather Forest's, you know, definition, with the end being the 30th of September, you know, we still have 10 days. So we may end up with, you know, quite a bit more rainfall.
Yeah, and if we got like some areas they're saying could get up to 2 inches in southern Arizona, that would push it. If the airport were to get 2 inches, it would actually push us up to about what we got last summer.
Yeah, exactly. So last summer, I think it was at the airport, 8.5 inches, mm-hmm. which just fell out of the top 10 mm-hmm. For the top monsoons, you know, for a 100-year period. So that's pretty good. Yeah, and if we got 2 more inches, we're at like 6.25 right now.
For the monsoon.
For the monsoon,
yeah,
that's right.
Year to date.
The average is about 6 inches. Mm-hmm. Boy, that'd be pretty good. I think that's going to be tough to do, but we'll see.
Zach Guido is with us, and we want to take this opportunity certainly to talk with Zach about the hurricane season. Like Hurricane Harvey, which parked over Houston, dropping huge amounts of rain and flooding in the Houston area last year, around the same time we get Florence over the Carolinas, which stalled like Harvey. Is this unusual?
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate. Obviously, it was a very tragic event, like Harvey last year, like Maria, like Irma, like all of the hurricanes, and it's been a bad couple years. Obviously, I think what is unusual about this storm is just its sheer size. At one point, it was 500 miles in diameter, so jeez. Massive, massive storm. What's probably not so unusual is, as you mentioned, it sort of hit the coast and just started to crawl.
Mm-hmm.
I think at one point it was wafting at a speed slower than you and I can walk.
Yeah, it was like 2 miles.
But that was, you know, these hurricanes, they push into a weather environment, and there was competing pressure systems, you know, in far off areas.
High pressure in the Midwest basically was like hitting a roadblock.
Right, it was like hitting a roadblock, mm-hmm. and there was competing. It was like a tug of war going on, and it really slowed that down. I don't think we can attribute any of those weather patterns to any sort of longer term changes. We can, however, talk about maybe some of the impacts in terms of longer-term changes and particularly climate change. I mean, sea level is higher on the East Coast, and there is a part of sort of anthropogenic global warming that's seen in that, and higher sea levels bring higher storm surges. So there is maybe a slight fingerprint here of longer-term changes, but I don't think the speed at which it traveled is one of those.
We had record amounts falling in parts of the Carolina. It's hard to believe. 40 inches?
Yeah, I it's really hard to believe for somebody that lives in the Southwest. I mean, you know, we get on average 12 inches and 40 inches, 36, I believe, in some cities. And the rivers there are just continuing to rise. And that actually reflects the fact that the main impacts aren't necessarily experienced during the event,
mm-hmm.
that there's lags in the system, and particularly with the river flooding. So
river flooding is really hitting its peak on some of the major rivers actually today. the Cape Fear River in North Carolina. They are cresting at record levels. You know, that 40 inches of rain in May, that system, that an unusual system to hit the Hawaiian Islands, hit the Big Island, and parts around Hilo got over 40 inches, and that was near, I think that was a record. And then we're getting another 40-inch event. That seems pretty darn unusual.
Yeah, it's just massive amounts, massive amounts of precipitation. I mean, these are systems. These hurricanes, these tropical storms, are just massive systems. And I think about the unusual part that you mentioned. If we go back to October 2015, there wasn't a hurricane. But there was this storm complex that dropped around 40 inches in the Carolinas as well, October 2015. So these massive storms can happen outside of sort of the typical hurricane formation process.
All right. Zach Guido from the University of Arizona will bring Zach in as we get closer to our next rain situation, which are our winter rains, which is an entirely different situation, which have been very meager over the last couple of years.
Completely different process.
Yes, it is. And we'll have you explain that process when you come back. Zach, always a pleasure, one of our contributors to the program, and we appreciate your service. Thank you.
Thank you.
This portion of our program, Zach, is presented by my favorite bakery in town. Do you like bakery goods?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
I love bakery goods. Who doesn't like bakery goods?
There you go. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Stop by right now. The bread that you will be served on your sandwich came out of the oven just a couple of hours ago. Oh, the breads are so great. Wide variety of breads as well. Go to my website, buckmastershow.com, for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and all the partners on our show listed there on the website. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Wednesday during the noon hour. It'll be time for our quarterly Tucson Air Service update. Plus, Frank Riggs, Republican candidate for Arizona Superintendent of Public Education, will join us Buckmaster noon to 1 on Tucson's Voice, AM 1030 KVOI. Worldwide live listening, buckmastershow.com.
Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor professional. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Week at this time, I look forward to consulting with my friend Shelley Fishman, certified financial planner. Shelley, how are you?
I'm well today, Bill. The market's doing great.
Yeah, I can't believe it. About 240 points on the upside. You live in the Midtown area. We're talking about climate and the monsoon. You had kind of a meager.
We had a meager.
You were
we got a lot less.
Zach was talking about the donut. You were kind of in the donut hole
you
there.
You watch the storms go to the north of us, and watch the storms go to the south of us, and then you turn on your hose and water your plants.
There you go. More trade war talk. Not talk, I guess.
Well, no, this is no longer trade war talk. These are real trade wars.
Real war.
We have managed to extricate ourselves as a country from every multilateral trade agreement that we have had. We have, in the process of renegotiating NAFTA, it's not clear what the Canadians are going to do, and it's not clear what the Mexicans will do if the Canadians decide they don't want any part of this deal. We've extricated ourselves from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which really pointed the way to a new NAFTA, because we had really worked out a 20-year later scenario and had to deal with what we learned from NAFTA. The effects of NAFTA were generally positive for the economy, though there are winners and losers, clearly. We are now in a problem with England leaving, the UK leaving Brexit, or leaving the EU through the Brexit process, which leaves us without a trade agreement with one of Europe's leading manufacturers and leading consumers. So we have a bunch of problems. And then, you know, besides that, the president picks a fight with China, not necessarily a fight that we shouldn't have figured out how to engage in one way or another. But if you know anything about Chinese culture and Asian philosophy, a lot of it is about face, and a lot of it is about not being shamed, and what Trump has done, because this is just the way he operates, is decided that if he holds a sword over somebody's head, they're going to, you know, cry uncle. And I don't think the Chinese are going to do that. Now, they've run out of analogous things that they can do in retaliation.
Right. This all started with a relatively few products.
Exactly. And
it's
now it's spreading across the full range, of imports.
Everything.
$200 billion worth of imports with a 10% tariff, with the possibility, the real threat, and we know that President Trump is good, you know, is as good as his word when it comes to carrying through on threats, that 10% will go up to 30%. So that amounts to about $60 billion worth of taxes that will be placed on Chinese products and will have to be borne by the American consumer.
like the goods that folks buy at Walmart.
Absolutely, and this is everything. This is paper products. It's electronic products. It's T-shirts and socks and everything that we rely on emerging economies to build and produce for us at far less cost than we can do it here ourselves. And then to the extent that there are competing U.S. manufacturers, what the U.S. manufacturers will do, and this is, I think, in part why we're seeing such good results in the market today, is that the U.S. manufacturers, which should then have a 30% advantage price-wise, not quite 30%, but certainly 30% better than what they had before, they raise their prices to a dollar less than what the importing companies have to do. And so their profits go up. And so this kind of activity can be very good, this protectionist kind of activity can be very good in the short term for companies who are measured, after all, on quarterly returns. Very bad long-term for those companies and bad long-term for the American consumer. And that, of course, is what has me worried.
Matthew has called us. Shelley, he would like to join in our conversation. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, Shelley, obviously this Goldilocks era is, you know, occurring right now. In lieu of the numerous threats, whether it be geopolitical or trade related and so forth. But right now, would you say this desire to for the Congress to extend additional tax cuts is probably driving the Wall Street bull run right now? Thank you.
Well, of course, and anytime you have the market reacting, everybody looks around for exact reasons. So let me say that it's probably more than one thing that's driving those markets. However, what you're seeing is the idea that the tax cuts could be made permanent. I don't think is a big driver of these markets because those tax cuts are already there. And so making them permanent doesn't change the cash flows at all. It just makes them permanent. Long term, of course, it takes what was $1 trillion worth of unfunded tax cuts and adds another $1 trillion to them. So long term, if you believe that deficits are important, then you think this is a horrible idea. If you believe that deficits aren't important because we can simply print more money and pay our own bills, then you aren't quite as worried. It's not clear who believes what anymore. It used to be that the Republicans were so afraid of deficits, they wanted to make sure we had balanced budgets, and the Democrats, you know, tended to be a little looser with that, though Democrats, you know, the Republicans like to say Democrats are tax and spend. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're spend and tax. What Democrats typically try to do is come up with revenue neutral plans. So taxes have to go up when Democratic spending goes up. But what is clear about, if the Republicans are able to, and it's going to be politically very difficult to stop this, if they're able to make these tax cuts permanent, then there is no immediate change in the cash flows. It simply memorializes, if you will, or immortalizes the tax cuts that were temporary to begin with.
So this is a factor, but you don't think this is the driver right now?
I don't, because I don't see how it changes people's ability to spend. Remember, it's a 70% consumer economy, and people are continuing to consume.
And, of course, the market isn't the economy, as you have said many times.
Yeah, it's very important to realize that while the market is viewed as a leading indicator of mm-hmm. where the economy is going, the market has been wrong a lot about that. And we don't know where this bull market will end or when it will end. We know that at some point there's going to be a correction. There was one this year. We're now out of that correction territory, and we're back in growth mode for the market. This year, past 12 months, has been very good. So far, year to date, we're at about the, you know, long-term average, 12-13%. Let's see where this goes. Let's see if it continues to ignore the headwinds that are produced by uncertain areas in trade and in, as Matthew so correctly termed it, in geopolitical headwinds and forces.
All right. So as far as tariffs, then, getting back to our original topic, there's not much more. This is pretty much all the products from China.
Pretty much. There's probably some more that
pretty much
we
across
could find.
The board is what we're talking
right.
about.
Right. The question, the big unknown right now is since we're now putting tariffs on an amount that is about equal to the amount that we import that we export to China, the Chinese can't do a kind of line for line retribution. They have to look elsewhere. And there's very few places for them to look or to go in order to slap us with something that's going to hurt. And one of the places, unfortunately, is the number of companies that have facilities that they own in China. So it is very easy for the Chinese to make it very difficult for American companies to continue to do business, to continue to grow, mm-hmm. to continue to build factories, to continue yep. to do the things they need to do with patents and that kind of thing. So the Chinese have other ways of getting at us.
The real estate area is another one that
absolutely.
We can get into maybe on another show, because that's huge.
So it's yet to be seen okay. where this will come out.
All right, Shelley, good session. Thank you, sir, and have a great week.
You too, Bill.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of Securities America or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor in private practice here in Tucson. Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through PFG Advisors. Securities America and PFG Advisors are separate entities.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Okay, today's Tuesday. The weekend's coming. How about a road trip over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico this weekend? Doesn't take a lot of planning. It's only a three-hour drive from Tucson. Check out southwestnewmexico.org. It is a good starting place for your journey over there, and you're going to enjoy yourself this time of year. It's so pretty in that area of the Gila National Wilderness. We're talking about the summer rains. Things really greened up over there, and lots to do. All the recreation opportunities listed at southwestnewmexico.org. Also, where to stay in the area, and there's some really nice accommodations in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. In our continuing look at some of the key races coming up here, we have the early ballots going to be dropped in just a couple of weeks. Today, let's focus on the Arizona House race in District 9. Of course, there will be three candidates on the ballot, one a Republican, challenger Anna Henderson, and two incumbent Democrats, Pamela Powers Hanley, seeking re-election, and Dr. Randy Fries, her seatmate, also seeking re-election in District 10. Pam Powers is with us now on the live line. Pam Powers Hanley. Representative Hanley, how are you?
Good. How are you, Bill?
Doing real well. Tell me about what you're focusing on in this run-up to the general election.
Well, right now we're focusing on meeting as many voters as possible. I've been doing lots of events. I think last week, several days, I had two or three different events. We have canvassers going out during the weekdays, and also joint canvasses with Dr. Fries and Victoria Steele on Saturdays. And so we are meeting as many voters as possible and reaching out in multiple ways, you know, at the door, soon in their mailboxes, and also on social media. We've also got an amazing group of LD9 precinct committee people who are helping us out. They have their own strategy, and so They're like the wind beneath our wings also. So we're hoping to have a resounding victory on November 6th like we did on November 8th. That's our goal.
Do you think there is going to be a blue wave in Arizona?
Oh, I think there are a lot of possibilities. There was obviously a big turnout statewide in the primary thanks to all of the different races that were going on. And there are several that in past years that might not have been competitive that looked pretty close now. The ADLCC, you know, the Arizona Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, they've been analyzing data, you know, and so we're being very strategic. But yes, I think there could be surprises on election night. Like there were on the primary night, there were surprises.
Yes, there were. Tell our listeners about yourself. Perhaps they're not have not been following the race. Who is Pamela Powers Hanley?
Well, I grew up in a little town called Amherst, Ohio, but I moved to Tucson in 1981, so I've been here for quite some time. I have a bachelor's degree in journalism, and most of my career was in public relations and corporate communication until I got a master's in public health from the University of Arizona. And then I moved more into public health and research. And so one of the reasons that I got into the legislature in 2016 was that I see the state making bad public health decisions, right? So a lot of times they'll make short-term decisions like cutting the cash assistance for the poor, right? So that saves them money in the short term, but then they have far more people living in poverty. And so it could cost us money in the long run, you know, than that short-term savings. And so I think that there are many different health issues that somebody with a master's in public health could add to the conversation. And we did that in 2018 with the passage of the opioid bill and passage of dental therapy. And so I'm there to fight for the rights of the people, but also to fight for their well-being and to help them lead healthier lives.
So the two incumbents, you and well-known emergency room physician, Dr. Randall Fries, are very much health-oriented.
Yes, yes. And in fact, I think that you could call the whole LD9 team your healthcare team in the legislature, really, because Dr. Freeze obviously is a trauma surgeon, and I'm in public health, and then Victoria Steele has been in counseling, mental health counseling. And so there's nobody else like that in there, you know. There's one dentist, and there are a couple people who are married to medical people, but otherwise, as far as qualifications and knowing what's going on in healthcare and mental health, LD9's got the team, you know.
And of course,
serendipity, I think, that we're all in one district, but, you know, we are close to the Health Sciences Center, and there are a lot of doctors and medical students and people related to the university who are in LD9.
What about your opponent, Republican opponent Anna Henderson? What can you say about her?
Well, I think that she's too extreme for LD9. In 2016, in the clean elections debate, you know, she talked about how she supported President Trump and was going to vote for him. She also said that, you know, she's obviously anti-abortion. And she I just recently listened to that clean elections tape again from 2016, and she made excuses for Trump's behavior regarding, you know, the women who had charged him with assault. You know, she was saying boys will be boys and this and that. Well, that has gone by the wayside. Women are not putting up with this sort of behavior anymore. The Me Too movement has blossomed since she made those comments, and I think that she's out of touch with our district. It's not a Trump district, as far as I'm concerned.
What is the political makeup of District 9? And could you give us just a real thumbnail sketch of what are the geographical boundaries, please?
Yeah, the geographical boundaries. I always tell people it looks like a mushroom cap, right? And so down at the bottom, the south end is Speedway, and then it's bounded by Country Club and, I'm not Country Club, but Campbell and Craycroft. So that's like the bottom of the mushroom cap. And then it goes up to the east and the west all the way to Sabino Canyon on the east and I-10 on the west, and then the Catalina foothills at the top. So it looks like a mushroom that somebody took a couple bites out of here and there on the edges.
So it goes
and then,
goes into the foothills. So you've got a real – you have some affluent districts or affluent pockets in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. LD9 has more economic diversity than I would say racial diversity. We have about the state average of Latinos and African Americans, but we have great economic diversity going north to south. In particular, in Midtown, we have many people who are living in trailer parks. You know, that could be see a code enforcement maybe every once in a while. But then up in the foothills, you know, we have million-dollar homes. Absolutely gorgeous homes up in the foothills and up by the Sabino Canyon. And so there's quite a bit of diversity economically, for sure.
And political, how is it?
Yeah, political, well, it's considered a competitive district. And so there's a few thousand, maybe 6,000 or 7,000 more registered Democrats than Republicans. But then we have a whole one-third that are independents also. So we do have an edge over the Republicans, but then, you know, we have a third of the electorate also independents in LD9.
How about the statewide races, like the governor's race and some of these others, AG? Do you think the Democrats have a shot?
Well, I am rooting for them, that's for sure. I mean, it would make a huge difference for the state if we could take governor plus one of those houses, or mm-hmm. take or be really close on two houses and govern. It would be a whole game changer for this state. So I'm rooting for David Garcia and January Contreras and Kathy Huffman and Mark Manoil and, you know, all the Democrats who are running and all this massive amounts of people who are helping us. I mean, it's phenomenal. I've never seen the volunteering teams that I've seen this year. You know, people are motivated, and that's putting it mildly.
And you've been putting up signs everywhere, haven't you?
Yes, I've been putting up signs, and people have been taking them down, so I'm getting around to putting up another round of signs.
Is that illegal? Is it illegal to take down the signs?
Totally illegal to take the signs down or to mangle them. And Victoria Steele and I have both lost quite a few signs. And so it's kind of a hassle, too, because, I mean, the signs aren't cheap. Mm-hmm. And it takes some doing to get them in the ground. And so, you know, we keep talking about putting a candid camera out there, you know, because you can buy little field cameras. And I remember people doing this in the past. So we've been threatening on social media to put some cameras out there.
All right. Of course, early balloting is just, you really have to gear up, don't you, for that those first ballots being dropped?
Oh, yes. Yes. And in the primary, really the race was won in the early ballots, you know, because I think that Dr. Freeze and I both got between around 19, 20,000 votes. And I think that we got like maybe 2 to 4,000 votes on election day. So by far, most of it is in the early ballots.
All right. Where can people find out more about you on your website?
Yes, powersforthepeople.net. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. So check me out.
All right.
And hopefully vote for me, right?
All right, Pam. Thank you very much for spending some time with you, with us. All the best. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Coming up on 12:45, Dr. Mark Sykes from the Planetary Science Institute is next. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
is the Buckmaster Show. I got to get over to Green Things this weekend. I know, Mark Sykes, you don't do a lot of gardening, but I'm kind of into it.
Well, I want to protect plants.
Oh, there you go. but I need to get over there to get ready now. The summer has certainly taken its toll on all my geraniums and things, so I need at least a dozen geraniums from Green Things. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and I'm really excited too when I go over there to their 13-acre site. Zocalo is now housed over there, and Zocalo for years had all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America over at their location near Country Club and Broadway. Well, the merchandise is still great, but they're at a new location, part of the Green Things family, so check it out. GreenThingsAZ.com, good starting place. Let's welcome now Dr. Mark Sykes, CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute. For more than 40 years, a Tucson-based nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. You can find out more about the Planetary Science Institute at psi.edu.
Yay.
There you go. I actually wrote it down, so I don't make a fool of myself near the conclusion of our broadcast where I always say it's org or com. No, it's edu, and that goes back to kind of your founding, your sort of educational roots of the Planetary Science Institute.
Well, it was before my time with the Institute, about 10 years before I joined.
It's kind of Bill Hartman's time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And back then, you know, EDU felt better for people, and mm-hmm. so they grabbed that.
Well, there you go. So. I'll tell you what, I would try to grab a trip to the moon, a trip around the moon,
yeah.
Like apparently one paying customer has already signed up for. Is this for real?
Oh, absolutely. A Japanese tech billionaire has been selected by Musk to contribute some amount of money, probably in the hundreds of millions of dollars, to take a ride on the BFR, the Big Falcon rocket, to go around the moon like Apollo 8 and come back safely to Earth.
And maybe like a week's journey or something like that?
Yeah, 4 or 5 days. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Hey, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, take some sandwiches, you know, some bottled water, you're fine.
So what kind of accommodation are we talking about? I mean, have you seen any of the details?
No, there really aren't any. He hasn't built the rocket yet. He's got part of the framework done. They're working on engine portions of the engine. But I tell you, Musk has been very successful with his what would have been viewed as outlandish enterprises, in advance of them. And of course, now we have a Tesla Roadster in orbit going beyond Mars. Mm-hmm. So, so if he says he's going to do something, you know, I'd give me my odds at least.
How long is this supposed to take, getting this thing up and ready? A year or two?
Oh, no, I think
more?
It's, I think
to
it's
push
not
it back to
2022, I think, is the unmanned launch of BFR.
Is that a one-man or one-woman occupancy, or is this going to be
supposed to be room for a lot of people, because I think this is what he wants to use to send people off to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So so it ought to be roomy, and the billionaire who's going to go up on this thing wants to bring a bunch of artist friends with him.
Oh, okay, have a party.
It'd be great.
I keep flashing on that scene in the opening scene of 2001, A Space Odyssey, and they're showing they've got Pan American.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, going up to the space station, and everybody's kind of in these beautiful little recliner seats, you know, and they're taking their trip to the space station.
I expect that it will be stylish at least.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Anyway, would you do it?
Sure.
I would, too.
Yeah, if I had a spare billion, you bet.
Hey, let's talk about Ceres. Every year throughout its 4.5 billion-year life, ice volcanoes on the dwarf planet Ceres generate enough material on average to fill a movie theater. And that's according to a new study that was led by the University of Arizona with support from your own Planetary Science Institute.
Yeah. Well, we're all working together on the Dawn mission, which is orbiting Ceres right now and into the kind of the last breaths of the mission. In fact, I'm off to Germany this Friday for our last science team meeting. This is great research. We've discovered so many fascinating things at both Vesta and Ceres. But on Ceres, one of the things, apart from the great white spot stuff, is what appears to be a volcano.
Hmm.
You know, but it's not a volcano that's spewing out lava. It's a volcano that was formed through what we call cryovolcanism. It was like brine being pushed up from the interior and building up this structure. And what this paper shows is that there's a whole this particular one, which is called the Huna Mons, is fairly fresh, you know, probably in the millions of years old. But there's evidence of other mounds which have then, you know, eroded away and declined, you know, kind of collapsed in on themselves. And you see them dotting, if you will, the surface, which indicates that this is a process which has been going on for a long time and goes on today. Now, one of our in a separate paper, led by PSI scientists, there is an indication that the interior of Ceres could still have liquid water reservoirs, you know, kind of cool. Small oceans beneath there, and plumes coming up and putting pressure underneath the surface, and some of this stuff could be giving rise to these kinds of structures.
And where is Ceres?
Ceres is kind of in the middle of the asteroid belt. It's between Mars and Jupiter,
mm-hmm.
At about a little more than two and a half times the distance of the Earth from the Sun,
mm-hmm.
And it's the largest object out there. Put all the asteroids and put them together, Ceres would be, you know, like half the mass.
And it's interesting, getting back to the volcano, I think it's called Mons, M-O-N-S?
Mons.
Mons, okay. Yeah. Now, it is a 3 mile high, which would be roughly 15 or 16,000 mm-hmm. feet. Mm-hmm. It would be like putting the highest peak in Europe, which is Mont Blanc, right in the on Ceres, and that's it.
Yeah,
would be cool to see.
On our website, we have a picture of it on our front page.
Okay,
and it's a kind of a limb view where the volcano sticks up above the surface of the limb, and of course. Ceres is small enough. It's mm-hmm. it's 850 kilometers in diameter. That you know, you see the curvature of the planet with this nub sticking up on the limb. It's very, very neat. Very nice picture.
So this is no longer erupting. A volcanic eruption, as we would think of, like here.
We're not seeing it erupt. When the last episode was, mm-hmm. we don't know.
Hmm. But I guess there's a lot we don't know about Ceres.
But we do know that it's not billions of years old.
It's not billions.
Yes, that this is a new structure.
So Ceres itself is geographically young, or is it just the structure we're talking about?
Its surface has geologically new features on it, mm-hmm. and so it's not as dynamic as the surface of the Earth. You know, because we got a lot of things going for us. We got oceans, we got atmosphere, and we have ongoing volcanism because of plate tectonics and things like that. But Ceres does have a level of activity that is in geologically recent. So when you say anything that's within, say, several million years, that's like yesterday,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's compared with, you know, over the age of the solar system.
And, of course, this was discovered in 2015 by NASA's Dawn spacecraft. And as you pointed out, Planetary Science Institute has a role in Dawn.
Yeah, we have probably the largest number of people working on the mission in terms of the scientists.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So you have a Dawn meeting in Germany.
Yes. Next week, it'll be in Göttingen. And
where is that now?
It's kind of between Frankfurt and Berlin.
Okay.
So out there in the middle.
There you go. So. All right. Well, that's going to be a fun trip, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And so where is Dawn right now? I mean,
Dawn's orbiting Ceres. It's in a really great orbit. Okay. This is my perspective.
Okay.
It's highly elliptical. Mm-hmm. And so it goes way out, like 10,000 kilometers. But then it comes in to within 35 kilometers above the surface.
35 kilometers.
And so compared with our low altitude mapping orbit, which was like, I don't know, 200 and some odd kilometers above there, you know, we're almost 10 times closer. And so we're seeing things at the resolution of like 5 meters, you know, a pixel, whereas before it was, you know, a fraction of a kilometer. So it was or hundreds of meters per pixel.
That's like 21 miles. 35 kilometers is like 21 miles.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah,
pretty
it's
close.
It's really close, yeah. No, but it's really great. I mean, and of course, getting so close, we're, again, seeing structures and things that we can't explain when we look at it. And so it raises a lot of questions. We're seeing new things, and that's its new kind of geological processes.
More for us to talk about in your monthly visit with us from the Planetary Science Institute. Dr. Mark Sykes, more information at psi.edu. I'm a member. I encourage everybody to be a member. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, coming up this afternoon, we got Michael Medved right after my show. Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9. Me, Bill Buckmaster, will have our Tucson Air Service update, our quarterly update. And there's been some really encouraging things about nonstop flights from Tucson. On behalf of Ray Allen, Mark Sykes, and me, Bill Buckmaster, have a great afternoon.